Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
We're back again with the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara Shirinian.
We even have someone else in the studio with us for the third week in a row.
That's right, I'm Michaela.
It's not really the third week in a row, it's the fourth week. Third week she was actually in the town to be with us.
Well, who's counting?
Yeah, we might actually get to that interview with her that I keep saying we're going to have. Not about the games that we've played as the gaming experiment, but actually about the work that she's done to try and bring kids into a video gaming school. I think it's going to be an interesting...
I'd like to hear about the games, too.
Well,
actually,
we have more games to play. That's the problem.
I have a little surprise coming up for you guys and also all of our listeners.
What's that surprise, Ara?
Well, you know how you like to do all of these crazy experiments on women?
Or whomever, sure.
Or whomever. Well, how about we get a woman on the show who doesn't play video games and who's way, way over 60 years old?
And what would she be here for?
She would like play some Wii games, right? She's awesome. Like, she hangs out at bars and stuff. She's a party girl.
Okay.
She's from Scotland.
Can I make jokes about who she is? Like, perhaps... No?
No.
No.
Can't make jokes. Maybe Scottish jokes, although maybe one of our listeners will be offended if you make Scottish jokes.
I'm not too worried.
She's from Scotland. Anyway, you know...
Anyone from Scotland is allowed in the air simply because I want to hear the accent.
Exactly. So that's one thing, right? But I just think that really I'm just copying a thing EGM did, which was a few months ago. They were like, let's get a whole bunch of seniors in the room and make them play the Wii and see what happens.
I think we should have them play Rez.
That's also very interesting.
Okay.
So that's coming up, coming soon to a theater near you.
Really? I'm excited about that. Is it really going to happen, or are you just messing with me?
No, we can make it happen.
Okay. Cool. One day we'll talk about this stuff ahead of the time.
Unless I forget about it.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, I just thought of it, so...
All right. This is like your mom, or...
No, it's not my mom.
Your mom's not Scottish.
No, it's my friend's friend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Good time.
So so what have you been playing lately?
So, it's funny you asked that, because I've been playing a really, really cool game. Well, sort of cool in some ways. I'm actually rather ambivalent about the whole thing. But Persona 3, I don't know if you've ever played any of the Persona games.
Something tells me if you want to talk about it, you're not actually that ambivalent.
Well, I just found it interesting. There's a lot of cool things about it, but I don't know how much longer I'm actually going to invest time into it. The really sweet thing about all the Persona games is that they always... They're RPGs, right? But they always do like a little twist every time. So like on Persona 2, which was on the PS1 a long time ago... They had this system where every time you encountered a monster, you could choose to talk to them, right?
Like talk out your problems,
like,
and not have
like
to
have,
fight?
Like have a conversation.
Okay.
Right? And it wasn't like, obviously it's not like natural language or anything, right? I mean, you choose a bunch of selections. But the really cool thing is each monster had like a different kind of, attitude or whatever, right? So some of the monsters you have to threaten, right? And then they'll be responsive to you. Right, and other monsters you have to be nice to, and then they'll be responsive. And basically, like each monster, each type of monster has a different personality. And depending on what you do, they'll either become friends with you and like give you something, or they'll just get really pissed, and then you have to fight them anyway.
Okay, could you theoretically go through without having to fight any monster?
I don't know. I don't think you could. I don't think you could talk to the bosses.
Okay.
I think they're pretty much all angry all the time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Do you get experience points if you just talk yourself out of it?
You get something else, right? Right. There's a certain thing you get, like you collect cards from monsters and stuff that are used for other purposes, right? So there's certain things you can only get by talking to them. Anyway, that was the last one, right? Now in this one, there's this.
I thought you said that was Persona 1.
No, that was 2. Okay. I have no idea what happened in 1.
Gotcha.
That was like only Japan, super hardcore, even more hardcore than me.
Okay.
But the thing in Persona 3, which is really interesting, is that they've basically completely meshed a regular like dungeon crawling RPG with a, for lack of a better term, dating simulation.
What?
Yeah. It's more like a school simulation or like a social simulation. And here's the really cool part about it is that basically the game starts at a certain time during the year, and the game lasts exactly one school year in terms of the game, right? So every day, right, every day something will happen. And you choose what to do, how you spend your time every single day. So let's say, for example, it's the weekend, right? It's Saturday. So you don't go to school on Saturday. This is high school, of course, because it's Japanese. You can decide to, you know, sit on your laptop and, you know, play an MMO all day and socialize with the people on the MMO. You can decide to sleep in. You can decide to study.
Is it an exciting game if you choose to sleep in?
It's, well, here's the thing. All of these things have an effect. It's all the part of the strategy of the game. You can decide to, you know, go out and do something also, right? And the cool part about it is that, you know, when you decide to do various things in the social aspect of the game, different skills go up, right? So if you study, your academics go up. That will let you do different things. If you...
This sounds like The Sims, man. It does not sound like an RPG.
Right, right. It's actually really ingenious the way they combine these two things. For example, if you they have different social groups in the game, right? And the more time you spend with each group, your kind of ranking with that group goes up, right? And this translates into what happens in the actual RPG side of it, which is they have these things called personas, which are basically like fancy ways of equipping yourself with spells and things. And they also boost your stats, right? So when you, let's say you make really, really good friends with the guy in your class who's going out with the teacher. That's a storyline. Dating the teacher. Then, you know, your persona of, like, magician type level goes up, right? So when you equip those personas, they're, like, super powerful. So there's, like, a direct consequence to, you know, if you socialize with these people, these things in the game get stronger.
What's the art style in this game? Are you actually spending time in a high school?
It's very, it's cartoony. It's anime style.
Yeah, but are the environments actually high school?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, dungeons
then you go into the dungeon, right? The storyline involves...
That's in the basement of the high school.
Well, close, right? The storyline involves this thing where, like, there's this fiction where at midnight, every night, there's this thing that's called the Dark Hour that happens, right? And all normal people in the world actually turn into coffins for exactly 1 hour. And so everybody normal is completely not aware of this happening. But there's, like, special people, which, you know, your character is one of, obviously... who can actually experience, you know, this 26th hour, the dark hour. So, you know, the first time they find out about it is it turns midnight and everyone turns into a coffin.
Okay.
Right? And that's when, at the same time, there's just like this weird dungeon just appears out of nowhere in the middle of the city. And so, you know, you can go exploring that dungeon. So the other thing that's cool about it is that you have to maintain your state of tiredness in the game, right? So if you do certain things, you get really tired. Right. So if you stay out dungeon exploring for too long, you'll get really tired. You might get sick. Right. So then, like, in school, you might fall asleep and you miss classes and then you won't get your academics.
Dude, I got to tell you, what you're describing so far just sounds so incredibly weird and not fun. Like, I can't.
It's interesting. It is totally weird. I mean, the fact that the other part about it is that, yes, if you didn't want to, you could never, ever explore the dungeon. Although you do have to experience, you know, the social part of it. So you can, because every night you have a choice to actually go and, you know, do you want to explore Tartarus, this dungeon, or not, right? You can study instead, right? And it's all about resource management, because the way you choose to spend your time will determine how your character evolves.
See, here's the thing. So I want to sit down and actually watch you play this game, but I don't want the time that it takes to do that to actually be removed from my life.
Here's the thing. It's a lot like Babylon 5. Conceptually, it sounds really awesome.
No, the other way around.
The pace of the story is very, very slow.
Okay.
So it takes a while.
Bottom line, are you going to go home and play this game again?
I'm not going to play it for a while because I spent like a half hour in the dungeon and I died. And when you die in this game, it's not like, oh, get sent back. It's not like, okay, we'll revive you and give you half your gold. No, that's it. Like, you lost all that time. So that's retarded. That's why I don't like the game.
Okay, so you're going to go back to Disgaea 2?
That game is long gone, too.
What do you mean long gone? I think I played that game forever.
I did until I got to the point where there are limits. I have my limits.
Once you had to jump inside of a pizza to play the game, you thought that's crazy?
Despite popular opinion.
All right. Well, I'm oddly fascinated in everything you just said, so much so that I don't ever want to hear it again. We're going to be back. I'm going to talk to a caller. He has some questions for you about the Red Star. You ready for that?
I'm always ready.
All right. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome, everybody. It's Chatterbox, video game radio, and the volume's really loud. My name's Ara.
I'm Alon.
And I'm Michaela.
Now, as the volume continues to be really loud, we were talking to, we weren't talking to anyone, we were talking about Persona 3.
I was talking to you, just sort of blindsiding me with this crazy-ass game,
yeah.
Persona 3.
Yeah.
I've never played any of the Personas. Like, I was aware of them, but as you know, I don't play a lot of role-playing games.
They're hardcore.
You keep bringing stuff. Words or descriptions of these role-playing games that I intentionally don't play to the show, and they freak me out, dude. Because, like, you don't play the normal ones. Like, Rich is all excited about Lost Odyssey, which has got to be the most boring,
right?
Like, plain Jane role-playing game I've seen in a long, long time. It has nothing innovative about it. Like, its graphics look kind of cool.
Graphics,
and supposedly it's supposed to have a nice story, but it's the most tame, like, Dragon Warrior 1 role-playing game that I've ever seen.
That's Boring City. I think that the smart developers, like myself, have gotten totally burnt out and bored with the standard
fight
RPG
magic
structure.
Run.
Yeah, and so instead of doing something new, they take that boring structure and add weird things on top of it.
Like being in high school.
Right, and dating teachers.
So before we get to the call, you said there was one more thing you wanted to mention?
Yeah, and repeatedly shooting yourself in the head with a pistol.
That's an option.
That is not an option, actually.
Okay.
This is the reason why Persona was billed as the most, what was it? Like, underrated, controversial game ever by EGM.
Okay.
Because there's something in this game that is so much more controversial than any of the games you've heard that have controversy. And the only reason why is because this game is totally under the radar. You know, I was talking about your personas?
Yeah.
Basically, there's these things. They're like these creatures that you, like, kind of, like, attach or associate with each character, right? And when you want to summon a persona, guess how you do it? You have a gun, and you point it at your head, and you shoot your head.
Oh, what?
And this makes your character stronger and more powerful.
So you shoot yourself in the head, and that's what brings out your persona?
Yeah, then the persona comes out and does the kick-ass attack, and then it goes away. And so, basically, some of the beginning cinemas are showing, you know, these anime characters shooting themselves in the head with a pistol. And in the game, they frame the pistol as like, oh, isn't it funny how the whatever looks just like a pistol? And no, it's a pistol. They're all shooting themselves in the head to make things better. That is insane.
And remember, kids, this show is brought to you by UAT, the University of Advancing Technology. Go to uat.edu to learn more about how you can become a game designer and make crazy-ass games like Persona 3.
Good times.
All right, so that's how I fit that in.
That's
all right,
awesome.
So let's quickly and with poor segue jump out of that topic and into we've got a caller, I guess.
Okay, was this James from New York? James, no, you're on the line.
It's Ben 15.
Oh, we were so surprised.
How could this be? What's happening, Ben?
I had some questions about some design elements that you made in the Red Star, which I'm gonna seem like I'm negative, but I actually do really like the game.
Yes, let's talk about Red Star for the rest of the show.
Hey, you know what? Before we do that, why don't you tell us what phone number you dialed to call into the show?
My regular phone number.
You mean our phone number, 866-536-1100?
Yeah.
Yes, that's the number you called, 866-536-1100. So if you want to call us, feel free to do so as well.
All right, Alon's smoking tonight. So actually, if you know, I'm welcome to hear or respond to or discuss any criticisms whatsoever, so don't hold back.
All right, well, the first one is kind of minor, but it brings up an interesting question in that you don't have a jump button in the game. And while some games, a jump button is absolutely unnecessary, for me, because I grew up with games that literally the whole mechanic was jumping, it's weird when you're just not capable of it.
Right. Now, that's a very, very interesting question. And
now, wait a minute. He didn't actually have a question. He just stated that there's no jump button.
Well, I want to know why.
Okay.
Aha! All right. So, well, the reason why is actually not interesting. But I'll tell you something else that's really interesting. I think the reason why you expected in this game to have a jump button was because the very first stage of the game starts you off side-scrolling, right?
Yes.
And so the first thing you immediately think to yourself was, oh, look, side-scrolling, I want to jump, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then you can't jump, and they're like, you know, what is this piece of garbage? I can't even jump.
Now, that's what I thought when I played the game.
Yeah. Now, the second stage in the game, ironically enough, is top view. And if you're playing a top view game, you have no expectation for jumping whatsoever because it just doesn't display that opportunity to you, right?
True.
So it was actually kind of an oversight on our part where I think in retrospect what we should have done was had the first part of the game top view instead of side-scrolling. Now, having said that, the reason why we decided to do that was because, I mean, there's nothing in the game that requires you to jump. The game was built around, you know, the character's feature set of not jumping. If you could actually jump, just real quick, if you could actually jump, a lot of the challenges, a lot of the bullet patterns and stuff would be just completely trivial to avoid.
I was going to say, we need to remind the people who don't really know much about this game. This is a game that Ara worked on several years ago while working at Acclaim, right? And it's
yep.
If you've heard of Final Fight, like I would kind of relate it to that as a brawler, but it mixes old school like space shooter games that have bullet patterns like I was just referring to with street fighting stuff like Final Fight and other smash 'em beat 'em up games, right?
Exactly. So
it's a strange mix that also from level to level changes the perspective. Like first level, we were saying, is side scrolling, and then later on it's top view. And it mixes that up a lot. Isn't there some point where we're also like in a spaceship or something?
Yeah, we have a level that's totally basically just a straight up shooter segment. Yeah.
Which was awesome.
Which, well, I'm very glad to hear that because that part of the game I pretty much did all by myself. So.
Yeah, because it reminded me of Contra Changing Perspective, which was something I actually didn't like in the Contra games, but uh-huh. It really works in your game.
Right on. Good times.
The other question I had was, this is where the most frustration comes out of, is the leveling system.
Yes, yes.
So, first of all, you get ranked, and you don't know how. You can buy upgrades, and you don't know what they do. And if you make the wrong decisions early, then you end up
You're totally effed. You're totally effed.
This is a little peeve of ours, isn't it?
Yeah. We were very, very aware of this when the game was finally done, or at least I was. Actually, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I was even more aware of it afterward, right? Because this was one of those things where we had a shop system that we implemented, but the bulk of the details of that system came online very late in the cycle. So we didn't have a lot of opportunity to really see what the real consequences of that would be. And so, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. That's, in my opinion, that's the biggest shortcoming of the game, is that the, you know, most of the things you buy actually do very little to improve your character's performance, and there's no way for you to know, you know, what the difference between things are. And you're right, you know, if you make the wrong choices, then, you know, you're totally screwed.
So let me ask you this, Ara. If you put that stuff, if you implemented it late in the game, like you must have been testing the game consistently throughout the whole development process. Like,
right.
Were you just not having upgraded weapons while you were testing the game until the very end?
Well, most of our testing, and by that I mean, you know, our own personal testing, because we also have testers that test other things like stability in the game and bugs. You know, we didn't really test that system fully.
But how do you even go through and play through the game if you can't upgrade your stuff? Because it gets impossible if you don't have the right weapons.
Right. Well, but, you know, designers usually are skipping to certain points of the game with the correct complement of equipment that we would expect to have by that point.
In testing, before the system was actually implemented, you had the concept of upgrades planned.
Right, right.
Okay, you just didn't necessarily implement how they were obtained.
The implementation was definitely flawed, right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But the whole time there was design involving upgrading of weapons.
Oh, there's definitely a plan. I mean, with regards to, I don't, you know, not knowing how you're being rated, we didn't really feel like it was important for the player to know exactly how they were rated. Although I'll just tell you now, it's how much life you lose in the level If you don't get hit at
I figured that out eventually.
You'll get an S. You know, if you get hit a little bit, you'll probably get an A, and so on. I should say that our main impetus for the way that, you know, that system kind of was implemented was because we knew that we were doing it kind of late in the cycle, we wanted to be conservative so that, you know, we wouldn't give the player too huge a bonus when they bought something and totally, you know, destroy the challenge of the game. Unfortunately, I think that it turned out to be a little bit too far in the opposite direction.
Which is, I mean, that's kind of classic space shooter stuff, where the challenge is really, really high.
Yeah.
That's hardcore gaming, man.
Or something.
All right. Well, end of the segment. We'll be right back, folks.
To Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woo-hoo!
And once again, we're back. This is the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show with me, Alon.
And me, Ara.
And me, Michaela.
And so we were talking about the Red Star.
Yeah, I think, is Penn still on the line? Is he still with us?
Excellent. Good. Okay. All right, so let's move on past that.
Okay, good times.
For a couple of weeks, I've been saying that Michaela here has done some recruiting for a school to bring people in to talk, well, you know, basically to learn game design. And so you get to decide if we want to name the school or not. I'll say up front, it's not the University of Advancing Technology. Which we've mentioned this show all the time as one of our sponsors.
I think it would be my best interest to not specifically name the school. I would have to refer to some signed documentation in order to decide whether or not that was acceptable.
Okay, so let's keep it a mystery. Let's just say it's a competitor to UAT. But not that we have any bias. This is still going to be a very honest interview.
Of course, we're always honest here.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of integrity here at the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show.
So speaking of which, what credentials does one have to be a recruiter?
You have to have a sales background, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, so it's every recruiting job.
Did you have a sales background?
I guess technically I did. I'd done sales before.
I've sold lemonade on the side of the street. Does that count?
I mean, I sold long distance before that.
Did you say you sold long distance?
Yeah, that was years ago before cell phones were popular.
So you mean you sold, like, phone cards?
No, I actually sold long distance.
But long distance is not a product. It's a concept of space.
Right.
That's what I don't understand.
It's very similar to selling a college degree.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so tell me about this process. Was it overall a positive experience?
I would say that it taught me a lot about what the industry lacks in terms of having a defined set of people with credentials to instruct in the industry. And I think that it's come a long way. And I think that when you put together a program initially, because I came on board as a recruiter for this unnamed school early on in their game design program, and they drew a lot from individuals who had experience in the industry, but not a lot of formal education, which presents its own set of problems, I think, when you're trying to establish a degree program.
Well, if you want to be an accredited university, are you familiar with basically what you have to do in order to become an accredited university?
Well, there are different types of accreditation. There is regional accreditation, which is generally looked at as a higher standard of accreditation, and there's national accreditation, which is putting Ara to sleep.
This is important stuff, man. The point is...
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have dozed off.
You can't become accredited if you have a bunch of teachers who haven't actually gone to school.
You can.
You can?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Correct me, please.
Well, a national seal of accreditation, I believe, was initially intended for tech schools. Schools that say you could go get your associate's degree of auto mechanics at. Not that I have anything against auto mechanics. I very much like them. They fix my car. But that was the standard of accreditation that was developed for, and it sort of carried over into other tech fields. And somehow game design got lumped in there with that, which is really interesting to me.
Do you think that's really true or just something that your school did?
Well, I can only speak from firsthand experience. I think that that's changing in the industry, and I think that going to the GDC with you really showed a lot about how the industry is reforming itself and sort of setting a new standard.
Okay, so see, you and I have all sorts of discussions outside of this. So I have all this base knowledge, and I have to try to figure out what it is I want our listeners to hear. But we have a lot of listeners who have yet to go to college, or perhaps have gone and are considering going to a different type of school, right? So they want to go into some game design program because they're ultimately interested in making games. And so we profess how good UAT is because they sponsor the show and because I've been there and Rich has been there. And they're a local school, right? So I kind of know what it's like to go there. But I think you've seen a lot of things that I don't see and understand perhaps how it's portrayed to the incoming students and whether or not it's portrayed honestly and if they can really get out of it or if the people running the school actually believe that the kids will get out of it what we claim could happen. So, like, what would you – so I don't ask – what do you think you would try to portray to the students? Like, how was it directed from the school's point of view, hiring you? Like, what was the attitude? How are you going to present this university or college or whatever the hell it was to these incoming students? What were you saying to them was going to happen by going to the school?
Well, my job was to portray, of course, as a recruiter, to portray the school in the best light and to go through a lot of smoke and mirrors about the acceptance process of the school. And the big problem with that is that it ends up looking like it's a lot more difficult to get into one of these schools than it actually is. And a lot of kids paid a lot of money for programs that they may or may not have been well suited for.
And what could possibly make them not suited for it if it's not difficult to actually get into?
Just because you have the desire to be in a particular industry doesn't mean that that is the right industry for you or that it will provide you, that the education that you're receiving will provide you with the right skill set to be successful in that industry.
Yes, I'm glad she said this because the number one thing that I get from people who want to get into the industry is that they totally want, like, the idea of making games, right? But most of them have absolutely no chops or no potential or no real interest in actually doing the work. They're just interested in just this high concept of, I want to be involved in making games.
Yeah, I think we've all seen that. And we still see a lot of resulting apathy when they actually get into the programs.
Right, and I've even worked with designers who are like that. You know, there's a really huge difference between, you know, I like the idea of this, and I want to actually do this. Because they're two different things completely.
Well, yeah, you realize once you get into the position that it's actually quite different. I mean, and that's true in any job, too, though. I mean, you realize, hey, I want to be a cop. It's going to be really exciting. And then you find out that most of your job is actually filling out paperwork, which is really boring.
There you go. Or getting beat up.
Well, perhaps. I mean, that might be considered exciting. All right, but so my concern is that the school, when they want to hire you, Michaela, do they actually believe that this is a good product that they're selling to the kids, or do they realize that, okay, we're starting out and we're presenting to them something that is slanted?
I don't think that anybody who's really honest with themselves and is in a recruiting position like this, I don't think that you can truly believe that you are selling the product you purport to sell. I can't believe that these people believe that.
Well, what if you're selling a good product, though?
Wait, are you saying you can't believe in the product you're selling?
I didn't. That's why I no longer work as a recruiter.
See, I just think that salespeople don't really believe in anything at all, so they're able to pretend very easily that they believe in just select things.
I have to understand, like, I actually really believe in education, and I think that there are some amazing programs out there. I think that I just did not work for one of those universities.
Okay, so let's try to swing this into something that's actually interesting for the people listening. So they're going to go from, hopefully if they're smart, they'll go and look at different opportunities, right? See, okay, what does each school have to offer? And the schools out there, obviously we mentioned UAT, there's Full Sail, there's DigiPen, there's, I think Collins is another local college around here. There's all sorts that you can go to. I think Carnegie Mellon has a grad program, and it's been years since I've actually looked into this stuff, so there's a lot out there.
Yeah, don't go there. That school sucks.
Which one? Carnegie Mellon?
Yeah. They didn't let me in.
My brother graduated CMU.
Yeah.
It's a great school, but I mean, that was a grad program. For now, you know, at this point, maybe they have undergrad too. I don't know.
Yeah. After driving but, 5 hours to get there in 10 minutes, they told me, you should go home before rush hour.
So what should prospective students actually look for to try and just break through, perhaps, some of the smoke and mirrors that someone in a position like you are in might be throwing at them? How would they know better?
I think that they need to look for specific examples of what the graduates have done. I think that another key indicator of how intense or good a program is going to be is how specialized it will allow you to get. Anything that's going to offer you a very generalized degree in a field is probably not going to serve you well in the industry in the long run.
So if they just say, okay, you're going to get a game design degree, and we had like one student who now works at EA or some big company, right? That's perhaps not a good indicator?
That you should not sign up for that school.
So I bet you had examples, though, of successful students that you'd throw at them. Oh, this guy worked on this great movie in Hollywood, and this guy worked on this game that you've heard of and just played last week.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll talk more about that when we get back. Stay tuned, everyone.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's Chatterbox, video game radio. My name's Ara.
I'm Alon.
And I'm Michaela.
Did you like those strategically placed pauses?
I hadn't noticed, but now that you mention it, they were fantastic.
That's if you didn't notice them, I did my job.
Fantastic. So we were talking about recruiting students to go to a game school.
Right, and I was actually just reminded that for all of you thousands of people locally listening right now, that I'm going to be speaking at a game school locally here, Collins College.
We mentioned them last segment, yeah.
On March 15th.
What are you going to be talking about?
Basically, how to get into the game industry, or more specifically, please don't try to get into the game industry.
Ironically, you'll be speaking at a school about having gotten into the game industry by not going to school.
Isn't that awesome?
Do they know that? Have you given them the synopsis of your speech
yet? We don't focus on that part of it.
So how did you get selected for this?
It was just one of those things. That's all I'm privy to comment.
It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
Okay, so getting back to this discussion with Michaela. So you were recruiting students for this school, this unnamed school.
Yes.
Was it a university specifically?
No.
No, okay. I don't even know what that means to be a university. I guess that means you have individual schools.
Colleges.
Yeah, within...
I have a university in my bedroom.
Okay. Moving right along. So you were recruiting kids to go to the school, and you didn't really believe in what you were selling. But this is early on in the lifetime of the school, right? Or at least in the game design program.
I mean. In the lifetime of the program, yeah.
Okay, so basically they developed this program for game design this many, many years ago. Several years ago anyway. And... you were trying to recruit these kids to go to a game design program, and you were throwing out things that make it sound wonderful. Like, we've got kids who worked on this project, and they did great things. But you're saying that people going into this should look at those details thrown at them to decide if it's a good school or not.
Well, not only just details of where one individual ended up, but also percentage-wise where people end up in the industry. Like, do these people end up as testers? Do these people end up as designers? Do these people end up at Kinko's? Like, where are these people?
So where do they end up?
Not necessarily in the industry. And that's the big problem with it, is they're still employed. And so they're counted in statistics. So you want specific examples of where people work.
Oh, so you mean if somebody has a job after going to school A, then they say, we've placed this successful candidate.
Yes.
And they're working at Kinko's.
Right.
Excellent.
Yes.
Is that ethical?
I don't think that's very ethical. That's why I'm not a recruiter anymore.
I have to say that this just speaks toward the fact that people who are really into the idea of, you know, making games usually aren't cut out for it. You know, because the people who are really smart enough to do this usually end up doing it without the aid of a school.
You say usually, but do you actually have any stats to back that up?
I have years and years of intuition to back that up.
But is that a factor?
Personal observation.
But is that a factor of not needing any education, or does that have more to do with that these programs didn't exist 10 years ago?
No, I think that, I mean, I'm just talking about even recently. You know, I just think that the people who can educate themselves and are really motivated enough to get into games, they find ways of getting into games without going to the school. Now, the school obviously is a very, very, can be a very efficient device to learn the things you need to learn if you don't have, you know, the wherewithal to do it yourself. Because getting started, a lot of times, like, it can be very difficult and an obtuse process. So, but at the same time, I think that, you know, usually, like, if you want it bad enough, I think that there's enough, you know, hooks out there, especially with, you know, the internet and everything, that you can do your own research and figure out stuff rather than, you know, going to school.
There, I mean, there are people who are super highly motivated to do stuff on their own. Like, we had Silva on the show last week.
Right, like, he's, you know, a perfect example.
Yeah. He still went to school, though. Like, he might not have gone for game design. We didn't really ask him that. But obviously, I know that his degree is in computer science, right? So
I'm not saying, like, you know, play hooky all the time. But I'm talking about in terms of, like, specific, you know, vocational game design schools, per se.
And that's one thing I've seen. Like, we were all touting the benefits of schools that really focus on what you need to know in terms of, like, you know, if you're going to go to school that's really going to push you hard and make you study the computer science and make you study the theories of game design and whatever, like, really push specific programs of study, then that's going to make you be more successful, right? And one thing that UAT does specifically is that they really push you to work in groups and create mods and create a portfolio that you can use to try and help you get a job. Because in this industry, just like any entertainment job, if you don't have a portfolio to demonstrate your skill, then you're not going to get in anywhere. And, I mean, I don't know if you saw, did you just see, like, huge attrition at the school you were at? What actually happened that made you think that it wasn't a successful place to be?
I got the opportunity to actually deal with some students who had come from other game design programs in other portions of the country and became well aware of how colossally inept the program I was selling was.
Okay, and so how would they come to that conclusion, though?
By taking the classes?
That's another interesting thing, is that I think one of the problems with a lot of video game schools is that the people who know the most about video games are making them.
Yeah, but there's also, I mean, there are some schools that actually educate a lot of people in the industry or who have been in the industry, but are you just saying the educators were lacking at this particular place?
I think it was an overall failure of the organization of the program and the educators, but I think that it's too early in this industry to tell. I had a particularly bad experience at this school. I think it's going to look a lot different 15 years from now, I'll be really honest with you.
But I mean, would you generally say, you know what, just go to a place that's going to teach you game design, and then you, or not game design, excuse me, but like computer science, which is, well, that's if you're going to be a programmer, right? Then there's other fields. People want to go into animation and stuff, which would be something else, right? Where you might just go to an art institute, right? Somewhere that's going to train you in specifically what you're interested in. Then you can apply what you learn to the video game field. You can sort of gear yourself in that direction. But if you go to a school that generally teaches those core core programs, then you can do whatever you want with it. Would that be better than going to a general game design school?
I don't think you want... I think it's a really bad idea to go to a program that's generalized. I don't think that you can learn everything about the game design industry in 4 years of schooling. I just don't think it's possible. I think that any school that won't specialize you is going to do you detriment.
I think it would be awesome to go get a generalized degree. I'm not just saying that to
a second ago, didn't you tell me, like, education was pointless in the game design industry?
Specific education in the field of game design. I think it's actually much better to, you know, people say, like, you know, if I want to be a designer, you know, what should I learn? And I think actually going to a four-year college and learning all kinds of things and getting a broad education, I mean, like, computer science, okay, but, like, you know, mythology and grammar, I mean, a lot of game designers can't write. You really have to know how to write. You know, English, math, like all that stuff, that all folds back into improving your potential as a designer.
Then wouldn't every liberal arts student just be a great candidate?
Maybe, if they're good enough.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of in Michaela's camp here. But anyway, thank you everybody for listening. We might even be back next week with yet another episode of the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. In this week that follows, feel free to head over to chatterboxgameshow.com, learn a little bit more about our show, and even get in the chat room for next episode. Anything you got to say before we go?
All I got to say is good night.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info in the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.